¿Sí? Entonces, ¿cómo hacemos?
No sé, hay un francés, no sé si habla, hay un
partido de,
no sé si él habla español.
¿Y él
habla
this in English?
Yeah, the president. But I've given this talk many times, so it's okay.
I would prefer in English. But
really?
Yeah.
Okay.
¿Quién no habla
inglés? Porque el lenguaje es muy simple.
I understand many things.
So, maybe you don't speak that well, but you can understand. Is that it? Great. ¿Y tú? Querida, claro que hablas inglés. Okay. No, it's okay. You can leave it open, yeah. So, why this subject, which doesn't show up that well there? Resentment versus self-love. Everybody knows what resentment is?
Resentimiento.
Sí, resentimiento, rancor. Sí? Keeps on coming, keeps on coming. It's like we become obsessed with something that has happened and we become angry and it stays there. Sometimes for years, years and years. It's like poison. This subject, I've chosen it because it touches me directly. I've judged and criticized my mother severely for many years. And we as women really need to do something about our relationships with our mothers because it reflects upon ourselves directly. And there was a point that I couldn't even hear breathing. I was like, ugh. And I thought, I mean, there's something really wrong with me. I'm telling my clients that they are responsible for their own feelings and nothing ever comes from the outside. Please, no, please leave it open, it's so hot here. Nothing comes from the outside. I usually say nobody does anything to inflict pain over us. Nobody. It may seem like it. Someone insults us, behaves in a non-loving manner. But it's our decision if we want to, how we want to interpretar the other person's reaction or attitude. Maybe it has just to do with her. But because of our self-esteem, our self-love, which implies several nuances, we interpret the other person's reaction in a very specific way. I will contextualize, I will explain it all from childhood. So I better control myself. Please help me because every time I say something, it seems like there are other ideas and intuitions or insights and information coming. So I really need to keep on track, be disciplined. So I've came out with this subject, which I took to several places in Portugal, because I've experienced resentment and how it blocked me, how it put me violent, aggressive, bitter, reactive, and how marvelous it was to change it. And I will also explain how to transform it. I've also seen clients throughout about 10 years of counseling practice changing like from night to day. When they decided really to do what they were most afraid, which was to look into their mother's eyes or father or an aunt or a sister, hug them as they would hug their best friend, express, let the child inside, the adolescent inside express. Finally, you know, with the, let's say, protection of the adult in us, on us, to express everything one felt without blaming, of course, without doing this. Because you know, that doesn't work. As I said, the other person hasn't done anything to inflict pain, to really harm us. She was just unloading something and projecting something. Are you all psychologists? I mean, you're not psychologists, right? You are a psychologist, psychotherapist. Mm-hmm. Okay, third reason, why do I bring it here to this context? It's because I feel that psychologists, psychotherapists, they are the first that should really heal their resentment. They are the first, and yes, we know how in what state many of them are, and how people, what people feel when they're in face of a psychologist which is very defensive and very. So I really think we need to urgently rescue our self-love, which was lost in childhood. It's still here, the potential, but by the first emotional abuse, which could be, you know, the child is born while it's still in the arms of the mother. There's no reason usually for the mother to shout at the child, to beat the child. There's no, she cannot unload her own, may I say a bad word, shit, because the child still doesn't give her reasons for that. But as the child starts walking and exploring, and usually houses are not prepared to receive children touching things, okay, the mother, from that first moment the child breaks something or does something, she already has, from that moment on, she has a good scapegoat. We will see onto whom we usually displace resentment, because if it's kept inside, it creates real big problems. It's speculated that one of the greatest causes of cancer is resentment. So, by the first moment we even get a no, you know, like bad boy, bad girl, even if it's not a slash, we are vehicles of love. We don't know what violence is. So if we get a shout, it's like, maybe we smile and we laugh at the beginning, but then if we get the second one, it's not love. So we feel somehow uncomfortable, and of course we start developing fears. And usually, as you know, a child, when doesn't receive love, usually blames him or herself for what's going on outside, and what's not, let's say, pleasant. If a child sees the mother crying, she will, if it's not explained, even if it's explained, if the mother shouts or the mother is crying, let's say, she will think it was because she broke something yesterday, or she didn't have good marks in the school. If the parents separate, the child can very easily associate that with something she has done. So guilt starts building up very soon. I'm not good enough, etc. But I will contextualize that. I'm going to ask you a few questions to begin, so just for our reflection. The first one is, why do we feel and look like strangers to one another before we actually meet? And I put that in, because what's to meet someone? What is to? Why do we feel like strangers and feel only until we think we feel at ease with someone? So we're walking in the streets and we don't look at people's eyes. You know, here in this context, you go like, it seems like there's a problem with us. What's going on with us? Do you see children doing that? Yeah, they immediately get in touch. If there's no influence from adults, they're fine. We don't even look into each other's eyes anymore. Why do we judge people so often? To judge, julgar, projecting this way what we many times don't want to see, accept, and transform in ourselves. This is the phenomenon of projection, to transfer to the other our own feelings and our own characteristics. Everything we recognize in someone else represents one of the three, of these three possibilities. Or we are directly that, but we don't want to recognize. It can even be a positive characteristic. And if it's negative, you change, not me. It can also be something that we used to be, but somehow we started changing But we might still have the tendency to be. It's not completely transformed. So we attract people and we recognize people who represent that to us, who show that to us, or we recognize it in someone. The third and last possibility is what we recognize on the other is maybe, could be the opposite, the extreme opposite of what we are. That's the way we should follow. We should become a little bit more like that, but to the midway, not to that extreme. Many times we are attracted to people who are our extreme opposites. For instance, a person who is shy, who doesn't speak, who is a little bit timid, she will attract someone who is very extrovert and open and talkative. But then if throughout the relationship the other one doesn't learn to be a little bit more quiet and calm and receptive, more feminine, and the other one doesn't learn to be a little bit more expressive, that same characteristics will irritate us tremendously. You even say, how come you love that so much about him? Don't you remember? And now you completely, it's like you hate him for that. So why do we so often project, you know, our own stuff onto the other? Why do we have difficulties to identify, accept our own feelings and emotions and express them? Why do we have such difficulties in understanding, assuming responsibility and expressing our deep feelings and emotions? So this is like a reinforcement of the former question. Why? Is there here someone who can explain, who can give an answer? Do you know why?
We're afraid to get hurt.
Yes, we're afraid to experience what we felt back there every time we wanted to say something and talk. Yeah, that's it. It's a memory. Why do many of us still think, feel and act as if others have more importance, more meaning in our lives than us? And these people are called codependent, and the majority of us are. I will explain that. It's like, I need to be needed so that people like me. Why do we place so little, we give so little importance to ourselves? You know, someone asks us something, we usually don't think. Is this comfortable for me? Do I feel like it? We were taught to do things and not just to measure if we feel like it or not. You're not supposed to appetite, you know? Mi apetece. No. Why do we look into the eyes of, communicate with and hug close people to us in different ways according to our moods? So your girlfriend in the beginning, you know, as you met, and when you're well, you hug each other, you know, that doesn't, you don't even want to go away. But when you're moody, when there's a bad emotion, a bad feeling, then you don't want to hug her. Sorry to use you as an example. Why? You know, a child can hug someone she doesn't know, but really hug tightly. Okay, and why do we feel moody and angry and resented and guilty and tired and irritated and so on sometimes? And for many, as I say there, for many people, many times. Finally, why do we read so many nice books, undergo several types of therapy, participate in interesting courses, talks, workshops, and so on, and feel only a temporary positive change? Only a temporary for many. Maybe it could be 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 1 week, 1 year, two years. But then something happens and we go back. Why there isn't an irreversible change despite so many interesting things we expose ourselves to, including this talk, this lecture? Okay. The Buddhists, they remind us that behind or underneath, on the bottom of every feeling and respective expression, thought and behavior lies either fear or self-love. I put self-love, I don't put love, because for me this is the only love that exists. Then it benefits other people. If you love yourself, you don't get in conflict with anyone, you're loving all the time. And we will see what self-love means. So I would say, just to begin with, that to answer all these questions before that we just saw, it's because there is fear, right? It's not self-love. There is fear behind all those behaviors. Why we don't look into people's eyes, why we project, why we don't accept our own feelings, etc., etc. So let's start exposing how I see the building up of this situation. In childhood, the majority of us, I say the majority, could not express what we truly felt and wished for. Something simple like coming from school and having felt rejected in school, interpreted as a rejection of someone else's behavior. And we come home and we want to talk to someone, to one of our parental figures, and they go like, ah, come on. You know, that's normal. And they don't even let us talk. And usually parents, they don't feel like parents if they don't say something. And how many times we want it to be just heard, just someone to hear us. Mostly adolescents, just to, you know, trust someone just to listen to us. You know, it's not convenient what a child has to say, usually. It's not convenient because it's the truth. It represents the inner state of the father and mother child, the state of the inner child of our own parents, which is not resolved. So it is as if unconsciously they don't want to hear because they don't want to get in touch with their own wounds. And of course, because they don't feel they're good parents, I don't know any good parents, because we've been confusing caring to give food, give clothes, give a good school, best school. It's not love. So they felt as bad parents and then don't want to hear how the child has, you know, let's say was raised and grew up with all that bad parenting. They don't want to hear. It's a reflection of the inner state. Does this make any sense? Why they didn't let us talk? They didn't even ask us, you know, basic things like
what
you're feeling, and decisions such as where are we going for holidays? You know, like sitting and asking a child. It is as if a child has no voice. A child knows nothing. Of course, I'm not talking about the children that are incarnating now, right? They are different. The so-called indigos and crystal children, they are very different. But I'm talking about the way we were somehow treated. So,
can you describe a little bit about what you mean about good parents or bad parents?
Good parents are the parents who are affectionate and who don't contradict themselves in their affection. They're not, you know, hugging you here and kissing you here and then shouting at you and let's say, unloading their stuff onto you. That creates guilt. Good parents are parents who express themselves openly. They talk about their feelings. They are teaching you indirectly, let's say, with their model, with their own behavior, what's the ideal for you to develop in yourself, that capacity to express. And I'll go through that right now.
Okay. Don't you think that could be an idealistic idea?
Yes, it could be, but we can actually, with self-love, we can be very good parents. You need to be very well balanced. And to conscious balance, of course, and to really, really be working a lot on yourself so that you don't project.
You have to be conscious. You have to be doing work.
Yeah. So, but I will contextualize that. Yeah. So we also did not receive direct what I call affetto, affección dirigida, directed affection, which is the mother doesn't call the child and kisses a child when she needs love. It means that she comes to us because we have importance. And to, of course, to be affectionate with a child, you need to, there are specific ways to do so, you know. And it's not because one has good grades or because it's our birthday or because, I mean, it's constant love and there's no reason necessary to, you know, for it to happen. And what do I mean by affection? Is looking into the eyes, is listening as well. Okay, attention could be a form of affection. Is touching. I usually say, remember that the arms are in the direction of the heart because they are here, the arms and the hands, not to hold someone, not to beat someone, but to touch someone. You know, you can experience affection now. If you close your eyes, just for, it's like 3 or 5 seconds, you know, and you touch yourselves, cuddling, you know this cuddling? Can you do that? Just experience that with yourself. In your face? With both hands? Acariciar. And you can even hug ourselves. If you really go like that, you can really hug yourself. Yes. This is... Do you understand? There are people who never received one. Many people, huh? Many. So, we were also not told that we had 100% of value just like we were. We would be, you will be someone if you study, if you're a good girl, if you will be someone. You're not yet. Oh, this is strange. Seems like nothing that we do is ever good enough. We were not stimulated to discover and explore our innate qualities. And so we felt we had no importance. Nobody really cared for or liked us. We were never good enough. We felt unmotivated and uninspired. We felt lonely, sad, unloved. You maybe don't, you don't identify yourself with this, do you? Do you?
No, I identify.
You do? Well, because this theme can raise a little bit of resistances, you know. Sometimes we have difficulties to accept this.
And you think I might be resistant?
No, I was asking you.
But that comes from an idea about it?
Okay, I'll take back.
Okay,
right?
Thank you.
So, yeah. But this is the stage of feeling. I feel sad, I feel unloved, I feel alone. I feel, it seems like I have no importance. And then this is going to be reinforced by our own parents, by our parents' behavior. It's exactly what they do. How we felt, it's reinforced, it becomes more consistent for the rest of our lives because our models, our dear models, you know, as we go to school, as we enter school, you know, 6, 7, we have these feelings. And then facing the others, you know, experiencing, having interactions with others, we need defenses. Unfortunately, we learn to raise defenses. And where do we get the models? You know, we go home and we learn, okay, if you're feeling this or that, you shouldn't really show it. Maybe you need to just defend yourself and be aggressive or, you know, project onto the other. So we saw our parents not talking about their feelings, at least in an open, direct and responsible way. Something like the father comes from the work, you know, frustrated, tired, uninspired, afraid of change, feeling impotent to change, miserable, afraid, you know, and we haven't seen them expressing, talking, you know. Maybe he would just start blaming his wife or someone else or the boss. So we learn to see people talking about others constantly and not about themselves. How come we would learn that? We also haven't seen our parents being affectionate with each other. As I say, they're at least in a spontaneous and constant way. How many of us here have seen our parents kissing and hugging and, you know, like what we call love, loving each other? Is there anybody here? And you know, it could be 500 people here, the answer would be pretty much the same. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Of course, some people have resistance. They say, no, my childhood was completely different. It's exactly that person at the end that shifts completely when she finally accepts that, you know. So we also haven't seen, we were not taught to discover our innate qualities.
Neither our parents, yeah?
Yes, neither our parents. They were not taught. Say, artista, forget that. And we have this, we have an artistical side, which for me, it is put into practice, is when we feel completely accompanied. We don't feel alone or sad when we are in a artistic, creative and artistic act. If you recall a moment where you were writing a poem or painting or playing music, or you did not think about anything else in that moment. Anything else, nothing else mattered. So where is the artist in us, on us? Which started manifesting very early. But how was it? Was it stimulated? So our parents were good models, of course, because they were not enjoying, they were not having pleasure in what they were doing. They were not.
That nowadays actually is different, because
yes,
now you can, you have many opportunities to,
yes, of course,
to choose,
yes, to yes,
choose,
yes,
your job. Yes. In the past, yes. It wasn't.
Yes, like yes, 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 yes.
For many people.
But even then,
people that are not happy with their job.
Yeah, no. But even then,
more people can choose.
Yes, but can choose. But the system, the universities, they continue with their old models. So you don't, even though you want to follow your own vocation, purpose in life, it seems like, you know, the out world is not really stimulating in that direction.
In the past, they would be too worried about security, you know, and today know what we really feel in terms of security. Have something that is secure, although I don't like this job very much, but at least I have that money at the end of the month.
Yeah. I'll talk about that.
Yes.
Should I?
Yes, please.
Okay. Sorry, I strongly disagree with you. Okay?
Nowadays?
When we go to university, we don't have a choice what we study. We choose the subject, but they teach us what they think we should learn. Then you choose a job. And the question is, why you chosen this job? Because this is what your passion is, or you chosen this job because somebody told you it's a good job, or you chose this job to please your parents? You've chosen a job, okay? You like it for 3 or 5 years, that's fine. By that time you bought a house, you've got a mortgage, you've got debts, you have to pay for that house. And then you're stuck in a stupid job for the rest of your life, and you cannot leave it because you have to pay for the house. So you cannot choose anything. On the contrary, today, because of all the credit and all the loans that you're taking, you are stuck in it for as long as you live.
Yeah, but we're here to change that situation.
Good.
So,
continue, I'm waiting.
And we saw our dear parents. Listen, I'm not here to judge and blame them. If they could go back and be completely different, they would go back. Our parents.
No.
The idea here is not to blame, to culpabilizar.
Many of us have the same situation. We cannot choose.
Sure. No. Yeah. We already. Yeah, the idea is really to show us in what state we are, in what condition we really are, even if we don't want to accept that. So our parents were feeling miserable, but they were very afraid of change. of listening to their hearts and following their heart voices. And how are we in face of the idea of change? It's even said that change can raise more resistances and fears than death itself.
Well, we're afraid of change.
Than of death. So instead of, you know, seeing parents talking about their feelings, we saw them talking about other people. We learn in a very, you know, early age to project our stuff onto others. It's not convenient to look inside because then we need to make changes. We saw our parents arguing and blaming each other.
Why don't you change?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We saw their parents complaining. Our parents complaining about the jobs, bosses, you know, my boss is a bastard, he doesn't let me talk, he doesn't let me this, my boss this, my colleague this, my, the world, and then there's everything.
Why don't you change? You're not the husband I married, you change, you know?
So, and these were our dear models that we love so much, confirming and reaffirming with their own behaviors what they taught us and how they treated us. You know, I might repeat myself sometimes just to really get this, like, you know, installed or reminded, really well reminded. So we learn to live on the basis of fears, of trusting, of changing, of expressing ourselves, of not being good enough or capable, of being rejected, abandoned, not loved. It's a portfolio of fears. It's amazing. Eh? It's a really huge portfolio. We also learn, many of us, the majority women, to be good girls. That's why many women call men egoistic, selfish. So it's like they're in extremes, you know. My father, for instance, he whenever something happened at home, he would run away. He wouldn't want to know and to feel emotions. So he would just think about himself. But my mother couldn't do a little bit that. So she would get too much involved and assume responsibility for everything, and she wouldn't give space for him to do so, of course. He knew that she would be there. He didn't need to be there. You see? So these be good girls and boys. As we know, good girls go to heaven and the bad girls go anywhere. It's the same. Doing all for other people to like us. We will see this a little bit in more detail in a few minutes. We also learn to depend on others. Their valorization, respect, attention, admiration, recognition, approval, company, whatever. We are not giving to ourselves and we expect from others. This is terrible. This creates a lot of anger and resentment, as we'll see. We also learn to need and overvalue objects and social symbols, the so-called statuto, to feel safe, valued, important. Sometimes it's even one ring, you know, you feel like, you know, there's something that's, it's adding to you, adding, right? Because it can be anything, you know. And I mean, we behave in very, very weird ways. Then the more we over-identify with a certain object, the faster we will lose it, or it will be taken away from us. This, people are robbed, are stolen because of that.
And people,
of course, we'll see that. So there are two major ways, I would say, through which we try to rescue that love that we haven't felt in childhood. Unfortunately, we've done it in the wrong way. Instead of rescuing our self-love, we've been trying to get the love back from people. And it's like, está tudo invertido. It's upside down, the story. It's turned upside down. So that's one way is codependence. I need to be a good girl. I need people to like me, you know. This shouldn't be done, that shouldn't be done. I need to behave like this. And we are actually educated like that. No hablas lo que de ti misma, you know. They might think you're weak. So, and depending if we're men or women, we have certain beliefs are reinforced, right? In terms of education.
Can I say something?
Sure.
You can also choose to be the bad girl.
Yes.
That's what...
Sure. You have the really bad boys and girls who are what we call our brothers and sisters, who are stealing out there, who are killing, who are lying, who are... It's like the voice is the same. It's like, nobody cares for me. I'm a shit anyway. So, ¿de qué adianta? No adianta. ¿Qué voy a hacer? What am I going to do? Nobody really, really likes me anyway. Of course, the true voice is, I don't like myself. So then they go like, fuck the world. Fuck it all, so I'm gonna kill everybody. And you see the youngsters in the world going to school and killing people. And parents, there was a recent story, the 16-year-old man shooting their parents and the brother.
So you're saying that the origin is the same.
Just
to be a good girl or a bad girl, the origin is anger.
Yes. And yes, of course. Because resentment, when it comes to a point that you can't stand it anymore, and anger, mm-hmm. when it explodes also, very ugly, mm-hmm. can be very ugly. Mm-hmm. It can decompensate, destructure the person in a way that clinical psychologists and psychiatrists, they would say that this person she needs to go to the psychiatric hospital immediately. Because everything starts coming out. They say everything to everybody. They start insulting everybody. They start telling everything to the mother, everything to the father. But like in Katadupa, that comes out in an uncontrolled way. So we need to learn to remember to do it gradually. As I will explain, I will guide you through that. Okay. So it makes sense. It makes sense until now, right? Okay, codependence, I need to be needed, I need to be a good girl, so people, I will show a few characteristics of codependence, people to like me, I need to be a doctora, I need to have a good car, I need to have a beautiful husband, beautiful children, a nice parrot, a nice dog, all that stuff. So identification with roles, we're not our roles, that's not what we are. Roles, symbols, social symbols, status, to feel something. And we see the ridiculous behavior sometimes we have because of that. And we feel threatened if someone will come to, take our job and take our position, etc., etc., etc. It's easy to continue with that. Okay. So, I'm going to ask you a question. Another question. We saw the condition we bring from childhood, how we felt in childhood, how that was reinforced by our parents' behaviors. Now, for this moment, I ask you, is there anybody here who, even if only sometimes, hasn't felt alone? I'm not talking about, switching on TV and being with people all the time. Of course, you can't really feel what's going on there. Hasn't felt alone, said, with fear of not being valued, accepted just like he or she is, they are, of being rejected, criticized, abandoned, not loved, and even when being accompanied with boyfriend, with husband, with family, etc., with a good position, a good job, wealth, etc. Is there anybody who hasn't felt at least sometimes all that? It's a little bit how Yuri was saying, you might have your job. Maybe it's the job of your life. But then all this stuff that is not resolved might not let you be trustful, relaxed, inspired, motivated, etc. Is there anybody here who doesn't feel sometimes all that? And we're talking about the way we felt back there in childhood. Second question. What's going on here? Yeah. Is there anybody here who, even if only sometimes, hasn't judged someone? We know it's not good to judge, right? Hasn't criticized, hasn't lost his temper somehow, hasn't been violent verbally, or on the contrary, has repressed or suppressed feelings and emotions because of that fear. Is there anybody here who feels complete and constant pleasure in their work, hasn't needed any roles or symbols to feel valuable, or who hasn't sometimes been afraid of what others think or say, and who is always able of making new choices and change when necessary to feel better? I know it's a long question, but it's like a resume, a synthesis of what we spoke. So we learned this with our parents. We hate some things in our parents, some characteristics. But have we really changed? Are we behaving really in a different way from our parents? Are we? No. Quien cala consente. Okay. Yes, there is nobody who really, really feels, at least in a consistent and radical way, different from how they felt in childhood, and who behaves in a very different way from their parents. And here, this is, I would invoke James Redfield in his book Celestine Prophecy. Have you read it? Profecía Celestina? When he says, he contextualized our, let's say, the need for security instead of love. Not the need, but the focusing, the preoccupation with security. He explains it in this way, which is, I think, it made a lot of sense to me. Back there, way back there, when we had those existential questions, until very recently, they were not given answers. Who am I? Where do I come from? What am I doing here? Where do I go to? And where do I go to? This is a real problem, which means future. What's going to happen to me tomorrow? What is tomorrow? What's expecting me tomorrow? If you don't know where you come from, what are you doing here, why you are with these people and not others, if you don't know what's your purpose in life, etc., and of course you don't know what's the future. So this created a very, very tremendous insecurity. And the guys went to see if they would bring some answers, and they came back, not with answers, but with things, gold and spices from India and this and that, with things, not with answers. And from that moment on, so this is, could be a way to explain where have we lost this capacity to love, this value. Love is the most important thing. Where in time have we lost it? So we began, okay, it's better to create a safety stage, a safety. It's better to worry about security, not so much about love. That's why some parents say, oh, come on. In Spanish, do you use the word mimar, mimo? Ah, no se debe mimar.